rotation, so they can do all that I require. Eternal life needs a little distraction, and sometimes I need to feel human. Tonight I'm adding to my collection.
Good morning and welcome to episode 184 of Taking the Charge podcast with you from Regensburg, Germany. I'm David Hein of Hein News. Welcome back again. Great to have you on board. Plenty of hoops to talk about. I'm sure a lot of people's brackets have been busted, including mine, but that doesn't really matter. So have a couple different things I want to talk about, and then have a really fun, fascinating interview to let you guys hear. Looking forward to getting that out there. And before I do that, want to let you know that if you want to contact the show, you can reach me at Hein News on Twitter, HEINNEWS. There's the Facebook group. Just put in Taking the Charge podcast and join the group. Join the community going on there. The email address is heinnews@gmx.de, and the website is heinnews.com. I guess let's start real quick with EuroLeague. Unfortunately, I was not able to make it to the Bomber game. That's two in a row where they came up with pretty fantastic victories. They beat Khimki to stay alive in the top 16, and pretty intense competition going on there. I guess it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams at either 6-5 or 5-6. With three games to go, you have Barcelona and Madrid both at 6-5 in third and fourth place, and then you have Khimki, Olympiacos, and Bamberg all at 5-6. Bamberg with two victories over Olympiacos and a victory over Khimki, and they also beat Madrid. But question is whether or not it'll be enough. Looks like Laboral Kucha is almost clear at 7-4. It could be kind of hard to see them being overtaken by three teams. It's still possible, still would be kind of unlikely. Who knows? Things are looking a lot clearer in the other group. Fenerbahce qualified. Moscow, CSKA Moscow is also qualified in the Group F. And then you have three teams at 7-4. That's Lokomotiv, Red Star, and Panathinaikos. And then two games behind is Anadolu Efes, and then Dashafaka, along with Unikaha and Sedevita, look like they're eliminated. So it looks like Anadolu Efes is the only one who can still grab a spot. With 3 weeks to go. So pretty exciting stuff going on there. Obviously, that group, the group of death, has been pretty fascinating. This week also saw FIBA release their plans for the FIBA Champions League, Basketball Champions League, I guess is what they're calling it. So didn't really have too much of a chance to look through that, and kind of want to wait for it to settle down and see what's going on exactly. Before I talk too much about that, obviously the other big news in the basketball world is the NCAA tournament but definitely the biggest team to get knocked out is Michigan State, who quite a few people had reaching the winning the whole thing. I had them winning it, but a lot of people had them to go all the way. They got upset by Middle Tennessee State in the first round. I guess that's probably the only big upset. I mean, even if you look at Utah at a three, you know, they got beat by Gonzaga, who was, you know, pretty good 11 seed. And then Syracuse as a 10 seed. You know, obviously that's a big program. They took down Middle Tennessee State. So that's going to be a good 10-11 matchup in the Sweet 16, Gonzaga and Syracuse. But otherwise, I mean, you look at the West, it's top four teams, you know, Oregon, Duke, and then you have Texas A&M and Oklahoma as a 2 and 3. You look at the South, you know, Kansas will play Maryland. Maryland made it past Hawaii, who did knock off number 4 Cal, but you know, that's not a huge shock that Maryland would be there, obviously from, you know, a huge conference. And then you have 2 and 3 Villanova and Miami. You have 1 and 5 USC and Indiana. We'll come back to Indiana. Actually, I guess we won't really totally come back to Indiana. We'll more come back to Wisconsin, who knocked off number 2 or second seeded Xavier. And they're playing sixth seed Notre Dame, who knocked off the 14th seed Stephen F. Austin, who had knocked off the 3rd seed West Virginia. So really, you know, not a lot of you know, a lot of chalk, you know what I mean? It's and the only two, let's say, surprise teams from, you know, looking at the seeds are Syracuse and Gonzaga, and both are, you know, huge programs. So not really a lot of surprises in the Sweet 16, which makes up for some really, really good matchups. So this second weekend is going to be some big time games, which will help. I think it's turned out probably the tournament, the people who run the tournament are probably pretty happy, because you saw some pretty phenomenal upsets and you got some huge game winners. Last second victories, and yet you have really pretty much all the top teams left, really, other than Michigan State. You know, that's probably the biggest, I mean, not probably, that's definitely the biggest one who's not there. I mean, West Virginia, you know, they were 3rd seed, and but you know, that's you know, probably pretty much it. So you know, if I'm one of the you know, if I'm the NCAA, you know, if I'm the broadcasters, I'm pretty happy with how things have gone. I guess, you know, with Michigan State gone, I probably would have to go with Kansas maybe winning it. You know, they're going to have a tough test with Maryland, but still, I think probably they would be probably my favorite now to win it. But we'll see. Should be fun. Next weekend, obviously, this weekend will be the final. It will be the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, and then the Final Four will be before our next show. So we'll kind of I'll probably take a chance to, you know, look at that a little bit. And then obviously the week after that, we'll have the winner of our tournament challenge group on the show to kind of talk a little bit more in depth. Move to the interview of the week. It's with Brent Cahy. He's the founder editor of IndianSports.com. And it's a site dedicated to Native American sports, not just basketball, but pretty much all Native American athletes. And one of the brightest stars right now, Native American stars in college basketball, is Bronson Koenig, who hit the game-winning three-pointer at the buzzer for Wisconsin to get them into the Sweet 16, beating second-seeded Xavier. So that was the biggest reason why I wanted to get Brent on the show. I had been, you know, thinking about him for a while, and felt it was perfect timing to get him on this week. So without further ado, here's my chat with Brent Cawhey. So enjoy that, and we'll talk to you on the other side. Okay, so on the show this week, we have Brent Cawhey, the editor of ndnsports.com. Brent, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, David.
I guess first of all, this we haven't really met. We just met briefly, just chatting a little bit before the podcast. But the I had never heard of your outlet until I was at the Sweet 16. In Los Angeles at the NCAA tournament, where you were supposed to sit next to me, or someone from the organization was supposed to sit next to me, and it piqued my interest because it was a website that also had basketball, but the main focus of the site, not only basketball, but the main focus is on Native American athletes. So why don't you give us a quick a rundown on you know how the website again ndnsports.com how it got started, what was your idea on getting it up and running?
Yeah. The website was founded in 2000 by myself and a friend of mine. His name was John Harjo, and he's still helps from time to time when he can, but I handle a lot of the day-to-day stuff with the website. But the purpose of the website was to bring awareness of the Native American athletes that compete in college and professional sports, not only for the Native American communities, but also for the mainstream media. Native Americans are the smallest population of minorities in the United States, so we don't get a lot of specific news coverage unless we have a popular athlete like of recent Bronson Koenig, who has been on ESPN and major outlets like that. But we cover the day-to-day sports of the many Native American athletes that compete, like I said, in college and professional sports. And that kind of was the whole premise of founding the website, to give them that exposure and also to get their name out there to other Native Americans that may have not have heard of these athletes that are playing in their college or professional sports in their communities, and just give them an opportunity to just, go out and support them and also give them an opportunity for our Native American youth to see that there are Native athletes out there in college and professional sports. So that's kind of the basic premise of the website. And so from year to year, we find new athletes and continue following the other athletes who we started their career a few years ago or whatnot. And that's kind of basically what we do. And it's specifically to Native Americans. And there's over 560 tribal nations across the United States. And we're trying to find every single one that we can.
Okay. And when you say 560, how many states are, let's say, represented by that? I mean, in how many states are there? What's the exact distinction? Tribal nations? Is that what you say?
Yeah.
So how many states are the tribal nations in?
I think that we have tribal nations in at least. I mean, I would say all 50 states.
Okay. All right. Wow, fantastic. Know.
Yeah, so I think there's a distinction there. To make a distinction here is to say, when I say Native American, that I'm generalizing the tribal nations, but each tribal nation has its own treaty with the United States. Each tribal nation has its own culture, customs, You know, it would be basically me saying Native American is like saying European. And, you know, I you wouldn't identify yourself as a European. You would say you're from Germany. Well, you know, I'm from the Pawnee Nation tribe of Oklahoma. That's my nation. That's who I'm affiliated with my tribe. So that when I say Native American, it's basically kind of saying like European. Every tribe has its own language and customs and beliefs and governments and government to government relationships as well. So it's a unique situation that we have here.
And does that lend to, let's say, some areas or some tribal nations doing better in supporting in developing talent than others?
I think that you know, economically there are some tribes that have access to economic resources, and depending on where their tribal nation is located, like for example, the Seminole Nation or the Seminole Tribe of Florida is located near Miami, Florida. Well, they're a smaller tribe of maybe less than 2,000, but they own the Hard Rock Casino and Hotel operation. So their tribal assets are worth over $2 or $3 billion. Whereas you go to the middle of America, in the Pine Ridge Reservation, and they're one of the poorest reservations, not just in the United States, but in the world. Access to basic resources such as clean water, housing, food is almost non-existent there, and they're completely living off the funds that they receive from the federal government in exchange for use of their land. So, you know, it does have an impact across for some tribes where they can put money into education, gyms, and youth programs like that, whereas some tribes don't have the resources to put their money towards those things. So it does kind of create access opportunity, an opportunity for some Native American athletes. But even then, we still have those stories of those athletes coming out of those situations and still succeeding, maybe not at the Division I level, but definitely at the junior college or the NAIA or even the NCAA Division II or III level. We still have quite a few Native American athletes in those regards, competing at those levels.
And we'll come to some of the bigger names, which for the listeners, you will know these names. Who would you say are some of the biggest nations then? I mean, people would say Cherokee probably would know that, you know, the name at least. What would you say are some of the biggest ones?
Well, in terms of tribal population, definitely Cherokee is one of the largest tribal populations. Ahead of them would probably be the Navajo Nation.
Okay, Navajo, yeah.
Whose reservations spread across Arizona and New Mexico. I think those would probably be some of the bigger tribes in terms of the hundreds of thousands. I think at the last census, I think the government census indicated there were around 4 million Native Americans in the United States. So for two of the tribes to have, you know, 200,000 or more, that's pretty large. I can't really think of one specific tribe that would even approach that. Oklahoma, the state of Oklahoma, would be the state with the highest tribal population. I believe they have 41 tribal nations within the boundaries of the state of Oklahoma.
And what kind of percentage of the people in Oklahoma then would that compose? Roughly.
I can't remember exactly the percentage population. Probably, I would say at least 20%.
So, you were kind of talking sort of on a financial basis. What would you say are some of the disadvantages that Native Americans face? Again, let's focus on the sporting world, if you will?
Okay. I think a lot of them, I think a lot of the Native American athletes that are trying to make it to the next level, a big barrier to that opportunity is getting off the reservation to compete in national tournaments, AAU tournaments, and things like that. I think that's probably one of the biggest barriers right now, is that consistent access to these tournaments. And, you know, since we're talking about basketball, since it's, you know, March Madness here. You know, one example of that is there was a Native American athlete last year who was unsigned by any college, but he was in the ESPN top 200. I think his ranking was like 170 or 180 or something like that. I can't remember exactly. But he was playing with an AAU tournament, and that's how with the AAU team, and that's how he got his ranking. He was playing with a team where they were playing against other top, you know, 20 type talent. So anytime you get a chance to play against some of the best high school players in the world, you're also going to get looked at as well. He was, like I said, he was like 170 or 180 at the time. He didn't do anything different. He was still the same player in high school. He went to this AAU tournament. I think it might have been in Chicago. And all of a sudden, the right scouts were there. The right college recruiters were there. And he, overnight, he went from an ESPN top 200 to an ESPN 87. And so now he's ranked 87th. And now he's got more than a few mid-majors that were looking at him. You know, he was having schools like North Carolina, Duke, and Kansas also looking at him. And all he did was just play in a different tournament than he had been playing in. You know, he was still the same player he was a year before, and obviously a little bit better, a little bit bigger. But, you know, there wasn't anything that vaulted him from 170, 180 to 87 other than just playing in the right specific tournament. He ended up eventually getting a scholarship to Marquette, where he plays. He just finished his second season with Marquette.
Who's that?
His name is Sandy Cohen.
Sandy Cohen, okay.
But, you know, I think those type of opportunities and access are one of the biggest barriers, I think, right now to getting that next athlete on the national stage like that. We certainly have the many talents on the reservations. On the reservations, basketball is huge. And a lot of Native communities, going back to the Navajo Nation, where these communities are probably, they're spread out through the New Mexico and Arizona. Their communities might have, you know, a population of you know, less than 10,000. But they have these high school gyms that seat over 15,000.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so reservation basketball is huge here in the Americas, and it's big on the reservations. For everyone from 3 years old to people still play in their 50s and 60s. There are tournaments on the reservations every weekend now until the next basketball season. You can go across the United States and play in Florida, Arizona, Oregon, California. You can find a basketball tournament on a reservation. And you pay your entry fee with your team, and some tournaments pay out prize money. Most of them pay out jackets and trophies and stuff like that. And you'll see it happen every year. And it's just one of those things that have adopted by American culture by the reservation tribes.
And are these teams, do they have affiliation to the schools on the reserves?
No.
On the reservations?
No, a lot of teams, a lot of players will get with other. They have, depending on the tournament, there are more non-high school tournaments than there are high school tournaments. They just completed a big Native American high school tournament in Oklahoma last weekend. There's another large Native American high school only basketball tournament in Denver, Colorado next week. They have, I think they'll have over 50 teams in the men's side and over 26 teams on the women's side. And these teams will come all over from the United States, from the reservations, you know, Oklahoma, South Dakota, North Dakota, Arizona, Oregon, Montana, Wyoming. They'll come all over to play in this, in these national high school tournaments that are for Native Americans only. And
so would this kind of be like AAU basketball for Native American for Native Americans then? Would you kind of?
Yeah, it's basically, you would say it, you could basically call it that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it's great because they, even amongst our Native American people, we want to know who the best are.
Okay.
And it's not about getting recruited. It's not about a college scholarship. It's about, you know, I'm from Arizona and I want to beat the team from Nebraska, or I'm from Montana and I want to beat the team from North Dakota. You know, no one's really focusing on the fact that, you know, it's not helping them get to college, but it's a pride thing amongst the tribal nations.
But this tournament then next weekend in Colorado, if I'm a college recruiter, that would be a place that I would see the best that there is in Native American basketball, for example.
Well, yeah.
Or at least almost all of the best.
Right, yeah, because not all teams can make it to that tournament. But that would definitely be a tournament where I see over the few years a lot more college recruiters are attending and getting their from smaller schools, you know, NAIA or junior college or NCAA Division II or III. Are starting to pick our athletes out of these type of tournaments. There's probably about four of these tournaments nationally that most all the high schools that have predominantly Native Americans on the roster will play in. The next one after this tournament is called the NAVI tournament. That will be in Phoenix in July. And that's probably the largest Native American basketball tournament in the United States. They usually have about 64 men's teams and 64 women's teams. They play in and around the Phoenix area where the championships games being held at the Phoenix Suns Arena. And that's probably the largest one that is out there. And you get a lot of teams from basically all the teams from across the United States attend.
But some of those teams would also then be the same ones that were in Colorado then, for example.
There would be some similar ones in there as well.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And
how long is that event? I mean, if you're saying 64 and 64, how long do they run that event?
That one goes, I think they play 2 days of round robin where they play three or four games, I can't remember. And then they have a single elimination, 64-team single elimination tournament over the weekend with the championship game. So I think they start like on a Tuesday and then end on a Saturday.
Okay. So they're playing a lot of basketball.
Yeah, so they're playing a lot of basketball. And like I said, it's something that they're used to when they play at these Native American tournaments on the reservations. It's a community thing. Usually the tribe or the Native American communities are supporting it, volunteering their times to referee, to run the scoreboard, to sell food and drinks like that at these gyms. And you get teams that travel all over from, like I said, all over the United States just to attend these tournaments. And like I said, they're not sanctioned by anything. They're not a high school tournament. They're just an open tournament that anybody can participate in. And they happen every weekend from now until, you know, August, basically, or now until the next basketball season.
I guess let's move to the reason why I wanted to get you on this week. Obviously, you know, you mentioned Bronson Koenig. You know, he's hit the huge shot to get Wisconsin into the Sweet 16. Put out there on Twitter, that was for all my natives out there and my team, and of course the true fans out there. Thank you. He's from the Ho-Chunk tribe. And how exciting was it for you and the entire Native American community that a guy at that level was a Native American was able to produce at such a high level in such an important game?
All right, it was very exciting. I don't know, you know, how much you follow the American basketball, specifically Native American basketball, but about 3 or 4 years ago, there were two Native American girls from the Louisville Cardinals basketball team, Shoni and Jude Schimmel. And when they blasted onto the scene with Louisville, I mean, Indian country was just ecstatic and excited that we had two Native American girls competing on the national stage in the Final Four in the championship. It was probably one of the most exciting times for Native American sports. And I liken what Bronson was able to do this year. And even though he's been widely known the past few years in the Native American communities, for him to hit that game-winning shot, it just brought back all those memories that everyone had with Shoni Schimmel and Jude Schimmel when they played at Louisville. It was that big of an impact online, on Facebook and on social media. You had hundreds of thousands of Native American fans that were typing tweets and Facebook posts of how proud they were of him and how proud it made them feel and how impactful it'll be for Native American youth to see a Native American on the biggest stage in college basketball. So definitely it was very exciting time, and you know, we try to get out as much information as we could. I had a photographer there on site, and he was getting pictures to me as fast as I can, and I was getting posted them fast as I can, and you know, we were just trying to get all that information out there for people to share on their social media.
He's not the only guy that people will know. You look at just going through ndnsports.com. If you go through, you guys cover quite a few different, you know, quite a few athletes. A guy that people will probably know is Ron Baker from Wichita State. Obviously, he's been a big factor in the Shockers run for the last couple of years. There's Derek Willis down at Kentucky, and I guess probably the other guy who was at the tournament this year was Eric Green with Holy Cross. I guess there's did Will DeCarad, did he play with Wisconsin much, or is he more of a role player with Wisconsin?
Will had been a the past few years. Will had been a team manager for Wisconsin, and at the beginning of the season, the former head coach of Wisconsin, Bo Ryan, actually put him on scholarship.
Okay, fantastic.
And so, he was on the scout team for Wisconsin and on the practice team. So, you know, he had limited minutes this year. You know, but he's a talented player. He won a state championship for his high school team, I believe, and he was definitely he definitely has the talent to play at that level. And I think him, you know, getting more practice time, and I think we'll see a lot more of him in his final season with Bronson as well.
What do you think, though? What do you think about, you know, Ron Baker? Obviously, is a big name. You know, him and Van Fleet together, and you know, Willis, you know, sticking out his time. You know, with obviously so many other people going through through Kentucky. What do you think about you know, the Indian Nation being represented at really some pretty high level class high level schools?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people. Even myself didn't even know Derek's background until last year. But as we started putting more, finding out more information and putting it out there, then people really started to become supporters of him, and to see him playing at, you know, like I said, one of the blue bloods of college basketball programs, that's just phenomenal for any athlete, let alone a Native American athlete, to be, you know, at one of the top programs in the country. And so it's been exciting this year as well to follow him, to see his growth from, you know, kind of being a role player under these NBA players the past few years to move into a starting role and actually become a big factor for the Kentucky program this year. You know, when Kentucky, with him on the court, Kentucky is a hard team to play. His position, his size, his ability allows him to guard down low or guard up high. So that creates a lot of challenges for a lot of teams for someone who's 6'9" who can guard your point guard, or someone who's 6'9" can guard your center. So he definitely, people are starting to come around to being a big supporters of Derek, and we're going to be excited to see how things go for him next season as well. And then Ron Baker, you know, what an outstanding past 4 years, probably the best player to come out of Kansas out of the past 4 years. You know, his team went to a Final Four, a few Sweet 16s, you know, I think 4 straight regular season Missouri Valley Conference championships. I think they won the tournament 2 or 3 times. They got upset this year, but his career has been just as phenomenal, you know, as Bronson so far.
You mentioned when you were talking about Derek Willis that, you know, when you found out that you didn't even know, you know, I would assume that most of my listeners, my usual listeners, probably wouldn't know that any of these guys are Native Americans, have Native American past backgrounds. How do you go about this? How do you go about finding another player? Is it somebody who tips you off to, you know, hey, you know, he has a Native American background, or how do you, you know, how does the process work for you?
Well, basically, that's how it does work for us at this point in time. Is we have relatives of these athletes. They could be a cousin, an uncle, an aunt, brother, sister, family friend. They'll get a hold of us on the social media and say, hey, my cousin so-and-so is playing for this university, and he's a member or she's a member of this tribe. And that works out great for us so that we don't have to spend a lot of time trying to figure out who is Native American. By growing the athletes that we do and focusing on the athletes that we do, then the people that come along to our site and social media pages, they have information that they can share with us. So it works out great from that perspective. But back in the day when we first started, we literally had to go to every college website and check every college roster for anyone that might be from a Native American community.
And now, when you say Native American community, you say, okay, you know, from, you know, I didn't even know what city, X city, and you know, or, you know, like one of the guys you're working with, know there's a Native American community there, and then you just kind of try to figure it out, or...
Yeah, basically, you know, we have maps of the reservation boundaries in the United States.
Uh-huh, okay.
And we roll the dice to say, okay, if there's a reservation in Arizona, let's check the community colleges, the universities in those areas. Uh-huh. And then we start looking for familiar last names that a lot of tribes carry from tribe to tribe. And then once we do figure out someone who's from that area, then we can confirm with them either via email or now via social media that they're Native American or not. And that's kind of been the great thing about social media has changed us, where we used to have to go out and seek that information. Now that information comes to us. and it cuts our time down to figure out if somebody is Native American or if they're not a Native American. But that's basically the process now. Is how we handle that information. Is we allow it to come to our to come to us instead of going out and searching like we used to.
A lot easier.
It's a lot easier. And plus, you know, once we do find one, you know, obviously if they're in college, they'll have a 4-year career, and we make sure we keep tabs of who's graduating and saying, oh crap, we gotta find someone else to follow next year. And so it's been great the past 10 years or so, where we've had a consistent flow of Native Americans at the Division I level in basketball and other sports as well, that have gone on to do successful things.
Other sports as well, successful things, great transition. Jacoby Ellsbury and Jabba Chamberlain World Series champions in baseball.
Yeah, exactly.
Kyle Loesch. Obviously a long, long career in major leagues. Mm-hmm. And you know, you have a very, very big name, quarterback with Sam Bradford.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I suppose these guys are, you know, the biggest names. I mean, these are some of the biggest names in sports. You know, mm-hmm. obviously, you know, Jacoby, you know, signs the huge deal, and, you know, he was a star in college as well. And, you know, Bradford, how much of a feeling do you have that guys like that have towards, let's say, supporting the efforts of the Native American community?
Yeah, well, you know, in the United States, Nike is one of the biggest athletic apparel brands in the country, and the youth, and specifically the Native youth, and actually all youth in the United States, love to wear the Nike brand. And maybe it was about, I want to say 8 or 9 years ago, they had developed a brand specific for Native Americans, and they called it the Nike N7, with the seven, standing for the seven generation philosophy of a lot of tribes. And so with the N7, Nike N7 program, they specifically developed sportswear for Native Americans. And you can only buy these things in certain locations. And with the proceeds from those funds, they provide grant opportunities to people who are wanting to provide healthy youth activity or sports related type programs for their tribal communities. And so as this brand has grown over time, players like Jacoby Ellsbury and Sam Bradford are ambassadors to this Nike program.
Fantastic.
So, you know, to have them through the Nike N7 and through their own foundations, they go out and do these sports camps in their tribal communities. And obviously they're open to any that can attend, but they like to take them to their own reservation or communities, like Sam Bradford does a football camp in Oklahoma, and Jacoby Ellsbury does a baseball camp in Arizona. So to see them give back and acknowledge their tribal communities, it's huge. That goes a long way for our Native American youth to see that.
It's for me, you know, this is really a totally different world. I mean, and it's a world inside mm-hmm. Inside the United States. I mean, I'm an American. I've been outside of the States for quite many years now, and I don't know if you've noticed, but I've really tried to be careful about how I say things, because I don't know the proper terminology for some aspects, and I don't mean this in any sort of bad way at all, but you know, the way things, you know, are happening nowadays, you know, there's so many things that could be said, not even just Native Americans, but any class, any any race, anything, that, you know, you have to be careful. Let's turn it this way. What would you say are some of the, you know, if you meet somebody and you say, yeah, I write for, you know, I do this NDN Sports and we talk about Native Americans, athletes. What would you say are some of the biggest misconceptions that the general public who, you know, to talk to you about it, you know, that what are some of the biggest misconceptions that those people have?
I think some of the misconceptions that I think people have is, you know, all Native Americans are rich. You know, I think we get that a lot, that, you know, like I said, I was talking about the Seminole Tribe of Florida who
owns the casino stuff then?
Right, because of the casinos. Uh-huh.
Okay.
So they assume, well, if you have a tribal casino, you're getting a lot of money. Now, some tribes, and I say some tribes, I mean less than 5 out of the 560 actually give casino profits to their members.
Okay, wow.
That are of significant value. And what I mean by that is, like the Seminole or some of the tribes give up to $10,000 or $5,000 a month to their tribal members. But like I said, these are tribes that have less than 500 people a lot of the times. And these are tribes that have mega million type of a billion dollar type of revenue stream from their casinos. And I think that's probably one of the bigger misconceptions that we all Native Americans get free money from the government is a lot of what people say. And I think another misconception is that we all get free scholarships to go to college. You know, people are like, well, that's not nothing. You know, you guys got free money for scholarships. and that's not. And again, I think a lot of these beliefs that people have that are misconceptions are true to an extent. But it's true in the form that it's maybe one or two tribes that actually do that pay for everything, and even then those tribes, like I said, are less than 500 members, so it's easier for them to do that. Most tribes in America number above 5,000 in tribal membership, up to 70, up to 200. You know, it just depends on the size of the tribe. So I think that's probably some of the bigger misconceptions about the Native American Native Americans in general that we run into, is some of those stereotypes that people have, as well as, you know, do we still live in teepees?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure you probably heard some plenty of amazing things that you can't even imagine, right? People would think that, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I think that a lot of what we try to do from my perspective, is when we go into these media rooms and people ask about what Indian sports is, that gives me an opportunity during some of the downtime to say, you know, well, this is what we do and this is why it's important, because Native Americans, now these statistics are true. We face the highest, our Native American youth face the highest rate of suicide in America. Native American families suffer the highest rate of drug and alcohol abuse in America. Native Americans suffer the highest rate of diabetes in America. Native Americans suffer the highest rates of being incarcerated and or shot by police officials. So as a community, we are faced with all these negative statistics. So it is important when someone like Bronson Canning gets on Twitter and on the TV and says, that's for my natives, because now these native youth have something to aspire to. And that's important. That's the most important thing that I think that we try to convey, as opposed to just providing week to week statistics and reports on these players, is they become a beacon that native youth can look to as something they want to achieve.
And it would seem to me that there's also that it also builds, you know, just an awareness not that Native Americans aren't accepted, but more of an awareness, that, you know, hey, there's some, you know, that this guy is Native American, like Jacoby Ellsbury. So many people in America know that, you know him as a huge star. you don't know how many people know he's a Native American, or, you know, Sam Bradford. You know, I think that, you know, hey, this is just a, you know, to sound really dumb, but this is just a normal guy, you know, and wow, he's also Native American. So it seems to me that's also, you know, leads to a little bit of normalization or awareness from the general population, and how Native Americans are viewed. Is that something that you kind of feel as well?
Yeah.
Actually does occur.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's what I would like to see. You know, Bronson Canning, while he's Native American, but he's also viewed as just another mainstream likable athlete, because these type of athletes can bridge those gaps in those communities. You know, Sam Bradford and Jacoby Ellsbury have access to a platform that someone from the reservation doesn't, to dispel myths, to dispel the negative things that go on in our Native American communities. And I believe Sam Bradford and Jacoby have testified to some of these issues in Congress, in the United States Congress before. So having these athletes, you know, go to the next level, and I say the next level, not of being at the professional level, but the next level of being mainstream, popular mainstream, you know, even in my community here in Lawrence, Kansas, at some of the youth baseball games, I will see non-native kids wearing Jacoby Ellsbury jerseys, you know, and that's huge because, you know, they become someone, these athletes can become someone who can become a voice as a whole to dispel the misconceptions about Native Americans and address and have more star power to get all that information out there.
Chris Wondolowski, is that how it is?
Mm-hmm.
Wondolowski,
yeah.
Has been called to the U.S. national team for the U.S. Soccer World Cup qualifiers. Ron Baker was a member of the bronze medal winning team for the Pan American Games up in Toronto last summer. Is there an extra level of pride of you know, that when you see an Native American play for actually then play for the United States of America, you can answer that, but then also, is there any sort of, you know, well, no, go ahead and answer that first question. You know, how much pride do you think that is felt around the Native American community when you know, Chris Wondolowski or Baker, you know, goes up and then play for the red, white, and blue of the USA then?
Yeah, you know, even Wondolowski, when he played in the World Cup in Brazil, you know, the tribe, his tribe in Oklahoma, had set up the TV projector in their tribal building, community building, to have people from the communities, from the community to come watch the World Cup games, to watch Wando play. And so, you know, for him to be on the biggest stage in all of any sport, you know, the soccer, that was huge. There was a lot of pride. There was a lot of, and not just from his tribe, but from other tribes as well that were paying attention to the World Cup at the time, watch Wando play. That was huge. And a lot of tribes do support each other in those activities. But it definitely created a different type of pride to have. Not only did you have your American pride, you know, and another one of those statistics is why I say it was huge is as a peoples, as a Native Americans, our Native American peoples serve in the military at 20% higher than any other race.
Wow.
So our people are more in the military than any other race in the United States. So there is a huge pride for the red, white, and blue to support our athletes and troops in those manners.
being here in Germany, you know, there's a very big refugee situation going on right now, and I just heard yesterday, the day before, that the IOC was thinking about letting some of the refugees take part in the Olympics under the IOC flag. Refugees competing under the IOC flag. Has there been any sort of thoughts, or maybe there even is, and I don't know. But do Native Americans, do they have a, you know, to for lack of a better term, a national team in any sort of sport that competes against any other nations? I mean, is that something that was, I mean, I guess sort of this is, you know, that they want to become their own state, if you will. But I mean, is there any sort of has it happened at all? Is there any sort of thoughts that, you know, to like I said, you know, lack of a better term, a national team of Native Americans? Is that anything that's ever been considered or thought up?
Yeah. I think maybe 10 to 12 years ago, okay, there was a push by some of these. I talked earlier about the we call it res ball for short, reservation ball.
Okay.
Res ball. We call these res ball tournaments. A lot of the players on there, these res ball tournaments, are former college athletes that played, like I said, at all different levels. And about 10 or 12 years ago, there was a push from some individuals who wanted to have a Native national basketball team compete in the Olympics. And there was a proposal to the U.S. Olympic Committee and the International Olympic, I shouldn't say proposal, but there was a discussion about what the possibility of what needed to take place. And basically, they were kind of told by the Olympic Committee that since they were still U.S. citizens, as well as members of their tribal nation, that they were considered U.S. Citizens and wouldn't be eligible to compete separately as a national team. So there was a push, you know, some years ago to try to develop something like that. I think they actually even formed for a few years and played back then, when colleges could play all-star teams and stuff like that. They were actually playing college Division I college teams in California and beating them. So there was a push years ago to do that, but not so much anymore. I think also during that time, there was a funded organization out of the Olympic Training Center in the United States called the Native American Sports Council. And that was funded by the U.S. Olympic Committee. And the purpose of that was to help develop Native American athletes to try out for the USA teams. And we that program, I'm not for sure if it's still in existence, but there was, at the time I did know the director, and that was his job, was to find these Native American talents and help them train at the Olympic Training Center so they could try out for these Olympic teams. So there was definitely has been some involvement in those areas to try to get more Native Americans involved with the U.S. national teams and stuff like that.
So we mentioned Bronson Koenig, Ron Baxter, Derek Willis, Eric Green. Those guys are in college right now. You mentioned, you just mentioned that, you know, that some of the other, you know, graduates, college graduates, do we have right now the most popular basketball Native Americans? I mean, or who are some of the other, you know, who are some other athletes, some other basketball, Native American basketball players people might know?
Well, I think, you know, those are probably some of the bigger names out there right now.
But like even in the past few years or whatever.
Yeah, in the recent years, I think Shoney and Jude Schimmel are probably the biggest names in Native American basketball, simply because they had a documentary made about their journey to become college athletes that was produced by Jonathan Hawk, who's one of the more famous filmmakers here in the United States. So I think those
What's the name of that film?
That movie is called, or that documentary is called Off the Res.
Off the Res. Okay, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And that has was produced by Jonathan Hawk, and it's a great documentary if you get a chance to watch it about, and it's in the iTunes, you can download and stream and stuff like that. And it's a great documentary about Shoni Schimmel and her quest to become a college athlete and stuff. So, and it kind of chronicles the issues of that, of racism and coming from a reservation and a lot of those issues.
And so that's pretty, you know, it's a pretty accurate account then of yep, what, yeah, yeah. of what all, some all of the.
All of our Native athletes that are at the top level, we face these things on a daily basis. They face those things on a daily basis, mm-hmm. getting to where they're at. The things that you'll see in there is just to continue to work hard at their sport to escape from those issues is why they become so successful.
And so, but on the men's side, then we're pretty much right now at the elite that men's basketball has seen so far. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bronson, you know, he was the first Native American to play in a national championship game, first Native American to go back-to-back Final Fours, first Native American to have, you know, he's setting the record right now with his scoring. Anything he's doing in the NCAA tournament is record breaking. He's gonna leave a mark for someone to try to achieve. So that's good. And so same with Ron Baker as well, and Derek Willis. They've all been to a Final Four. And so those are some of the biggest names right now that we've had in recent times for college athletes. At the Division I level,
setting the bar pretty high, obviously speaks about the future, which leads me to kind of like the last thing that I'd really like to ask you about. I one of my specialties is youth basketball, mm-hmm. And you know, just trying to find out some of the young players, up and coming players that people, you know, should be on the lookout for. Mm-hmm. Give us maybe a couple of names in the Native American community who we don't know right now, who may be, you know, like some of the top guys in at the high school level, and you know, might be, you know, landing at a pretty high level college or whatever. Just some of the high level younger players.
Right, and I think one of those names that I think we'll see over the next few years is a young man out of Norman, Oklahoma. His name is Lindy Waters III, and he's from the Kiowa Cherokee tribes. He signed his national letter of intent to play basketball at Oklahoma State University next fall.
Nice.
Uh-huh. So he led his team to the state championship this year, but they came up short in the championship game. But I have a highlight video on there during the semifinal game where he took a two-handed dunk at least a foot or two above the rim and posterized some guy. So he's a big time player who can score from the outside, who can get inside and dunk on you. And he's probably going to be someone to watch his freshman year at Oklahoma State. Probably behind him there's a junior out of the Winnebago tribe in Nebraska. His name is David Wingett, and he's an even bigger highlight film than Lindy Waters in terms of getting to the rim. He had a dunk that's featured on the Fox Sports Facebook page and website where he was playing in the state semifinal game as well, and he got himself kind of caught at the free throw line. So he tossed the ball to the backboard and then gave himself an alley-oop. And so I think those two are probably going to be some of the, you know, like I said, David's a junior, Lindy's a senior. And then on the sophomore level, there's a kid out of Alaska, out of Barrow, Alaska, who's 6'9". And his game is very similar to like a Dirk Nowitzki. He can shoot the ball from the outside. He can get in and he can dunk. He can play inside But he's more of a pure 3-point type of shooter. But he can play all. He can get to the rim and finish as well. And he's only a sophomore, and they've already won back to back state championships there in Alaska. Definitely, you'll be hearing about his name. His name is Kameka Hepa.
Kameka Hepa. Okay.
Yeah. So definitely you'll be hearing about those three, or definitely those other two for sure, over the next few years in high school with David Wingate and Kameka Hepa.
And would they be then in Colorado or Phoenix then?
Now Kameka actually plays on a AAU team that plays at like an Adidas Select tournament or a Nike Select tournament.
Okay.
He was supposed to play in the Phoenix tournament last year, but his team was playing that same weekend. So it's possible he could be at that tournament in Phoenix. The Alaska team actually had won it a few years ago as well without him. So there's a good possibility he might play in it this year. It just depends, I think, for him. And even David Wingate out of Nebraska, he also plays on a state AAU team as well. So I think for those two, they have bigger opportunities to play in more national exposure tournaments than some of the other native athletes that play. So they may be at the tournaments, they may not. It just depends on I think, with their AAU schedule.
Okay. I want to let you have the platform. Tell people where they can read your stuff, watch your stuff, social media. Give it all. Go for it.
Right. To catch some of the latest and greatest news that our Native American athletes are competing in, you can check us out on indiansports.com. We have links to our social media accounts on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check us out. Share with your friends, and if you have a question about anything in particular, you can hit us up in our social media accounts, and we'll do the best we can to try to answer your questions.
Brent Kai, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming on and giving us some fantastic information about really people that totally deserve the attention. It's an undercovered genre, whatever you want to call it, and I'm really happy that it's kind of weird. And if we actually had met, I don't know how it would have been last year. But the fact that that nobody was in that seat made me go and look and see what the website's all about. So enjoy. Yeah, glad to have you on, and good luck down the road.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Fantastic stuff. Really learned a lot, I looked into the three guys that he mentioned at the end, and all of them seem to be pretty highly regarded. And so it's going to be exciting. Really happy to, I'm really, really happy to get sort of the word out, just so that more people can know about it. I was really fascinated when I saw the website, and I thought it was a fantastic idea, and I had been thinking about a long time having him on the show and to talk about it all. And he, provided a lot of great insight, and I will be writing about it in my column this week for FIBA. So that comes out obviously Thursday, so can check that out. I have a link for that on the Facebook group. So you can look forward to that, but just fantastic stuff. Thanks to Brent for coming on the show. Go check out the site, ndnsports.com. And there's a lot of good stuff up there. You can see, it's broken down by sports and they're also on Facebook. They have, some good links there. They're also following what other people might be writing about these athletes as well. So if you're interested in Native American sports, Native American athletes, like we said, there's some big time athletes out there: Jacoby Ellsbury, Sam Bradford, and then obviously Bronson and a couple of the other guys, and then the two sisters, the one Sean is playing in the WNBA. So some pretty high level talent. So it'll be definitely when these guys go to college, I'll be definitely checking them out and see what they can do. So again, thanks Brent for coming on. And with that, I guess we will call it a show. Last thing, obviously, I want to let you know is what you're listening to. And this is actually a pretty interesting, album. It's from Monk Turner, and the album is called God's Complex, a suburban rock opera with mythical overtones. And so it's a concept album, and each song is sung by a different Greek god or goddess, but transplanted into an era of modern suburban angst. So this one is Young Lovers for Every Occasion, and Aphrodite's song. So again, Monk Turner, Young Lovers for Every Occasion. And it's available on freemusicarchive.org. You can listen to all the Greek gods singing about modern day angst. So enjoy it. Enjoy the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. And a couple of great another week of really super important games in the EuroLeague. And we'll talk to you next week.
Sometimes I need to feel human. Tonight I'm adding to my collection. this is Fran Preschella from ESPN College Basketball. You're listening to Taking the Charge.